This edition of the week is sponsored by Invitrogen. Gibco Cell Culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.
This week, digging into the ecology of Panama. It's one of these cases of corrupt government and developing country trying to maintain in a competitive economy. But they also have a very strategic location in the world, but with strategic wildlife and forest that is sort of getting caught by the wayside.
Coming up, we hear more about plans to expand the canal in Panama and what's in store for the country's ecology. Hi, I'm Carrie Grenz, and you're listening to The Week, the weekly news podcast from The Scientist. In news this week, complaints about the American Chemical Society, sex chromosomes speed addiction, and new heart anatomy found in a model organism. Andrea Garleski has more from The Scientist Daily News.
An anonymous email that went around to college librarians, American Chemical Society administrators, and a science writing group slams the society's administrative policies. The emailer, a self-labeled ACS insider, says that bonuses for heads are tied to publishing profits, which explains the society's anti-open access stance in regards to its journals. The chair of the ACS's board of directors said the claims are erroneous and misleading. But after The Scientist posted its article about the email online, three readers wrote in to voice their complaints against the society. Richard Ebright, a Rutgers professor and outspoken critic of federal bioterrorism spending, wrote, "The ACS management has fought tooth and nail against the interests of ACS members and against the interests of science on access issues." If you're a member of the ACS, let us know what you think. Post your comments on thescientist.com. In research news, Yale scientists have found that having two X chromosomes leads to developing addictive behaviors faster. Jennifer Quinn and her colleagues crossed gonads in mice to mismatch gonads with sex chromosomes.
Animals with female sex chromosomes acquired a habit faster than animals with male sex chromosomes, so XY. So that was after the early training, the moderate training. And then in another experiment, we trained them up longer because eventually everyone should form a habit. And so that's exactly what we found. If we extended the training, then everybody ultimately did form the habit. So, it's a difference in the rate of habit formation in XX animals.
Females are known to form addictive habits faster than males, and it was thought to be a function of hormones. Quinn said there's likely more going on.
We could have both sex chromosomes and gonadal hormones that are contributing in different ways, and both contributing to make it such that females have a higher or faster transition to an addictive state.
Quinn's findings are published in the latest online edition of Nature Neuroscience. On to another model organism, Drosophila appear to have more openings in its heart than previously observed. The openings, or ostia, allow the flow of the insect's blood, or hemolymph. This newly identified fifth pair of ostia are located in the animal's thorax and are thought to move hemolymph from the head toward the abdomen, the opposite direction of the other ostia. The fifth pair help explain hemolymph flow when the insect periodically reverses its heartbeat.
That was The Scientist Andrea Garleski. You can read all our stories from The Scientist Daily News on our website, thescientist.com. While you're there, check out the beautiful picture slideshow of the Panama Canal. Especially striking are the shots from excavation sites, where researchers are studying the effects of expanding the canal. Andrea Garleski traveled to Panama this summer and reported on the ecological effects expanding the canal will have on the aquatic and terrestrial habitats there. Andrea popped in the studio this week and told me about what scientists think about the government's decision to expand the canal.
The consensus of non-Panamanians, at least the ones who I talked to at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute, which is based in Panama City, is that they're, quote, very suspicious about, end quote, the government's plans to expand the canal. And that's for a couple reasons. And the first is that, as I reported in the story, Panama voted in over 80% majority to expand the canal. And Panama has an unfortunate past of having a corrupt government, as far as, you know, officials being bribed, votes being bought. So some of the non-Panamanians are suspicious that that was a legitimate vote in favor of the expansion of the canal. But regardless, Panama in general wants to remain competitive in the global shipping market. I don't know if you've read the news recently, but the Arctic Circle, with the melting because of global warming, is opening up as a shipping route. So they fear that unless they meet the global need of shipping, they're going to kind of fall behind, and someone else will take over from that. And one of the other major concerns that non-Panamanians have, and there was a very strong voice editorial written in the New Scientist about this that I mentioned in the article, is that Panama does not do adequate environmental impact assessments. So they can say all these great things about what these new projects will do for the economy without really addressing what the environmental impacts are. And the canal is really just one example of that. Some things I didn't mention in the article that simultaneously are going on in Panama as we speak is that they want to put a highway that cuts across the entire isthmus. And obviously that's going to require a lot of land clearing and it'll fragment the forests. So that's, you know, one element that's also coming hand in hand with the canal expansion is that you're having all the forest along both sides of the canal, which used to be off limits when the U.S. Maintained the canal zone until 1999, is now being rampantly developed and built up. And you have this corridor now going from the north coast to the south coast between Cologne and Panama City that is a giant highway, and it's just causing a lot of fragmentation and development in the country. And there's also an oil pipeline that's going in that, you know, might spell even more ecological disaster than widening the canal. So these are some of the issues that exist in the country that some of the scientists and residents there think the government is not doing a very good job of anticipating. Indeed, it's really not in their best interest to anticipate them because, again, they are a developing country, they need the income, they depend on the global shipping market. So it's sort of, you know, it's one of these cases of corrupt government and developing country trying to maintain in a competitive economy. But they also have a very strategic location in the world, but with strategic wildlife and forest that is sort of getting caught by the wayside.
So did some of those scientists who were suspicious of the government's decision to expand and put in the oil pipe and things like that, did they think that with better environmental impact assessments that these changes to the infrastructure of the canal and the highways could be done in a less damaging way to the environment? Is it possible?
Actually, the canal expansion from, you know, the people I talked to down there, it seems to be the least of their worries. It really happens to be this highway, the pipeline, because the way they're doing it, there are no checks on it. And so I guess, yes, the scientists, of course, think that there are ecologically sound ways to do these things, and they wouldn't want to see Panama kept behind in the world economy. But again, scientists at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute are there basically on invitation from the government. You know, they provide advisement to the upper levels of council, and they can offer their scientific opinion, but at the end of the day, they're guests of the country. So, of course, there are more ecologically sound ways to go about the various projects that they have, but again, it's a burgeoning government with a burgeoning economy, and they may not necessarily be experienced enough to know that environmental impact assessments, yes, are valuable and you have to put money into them.
Mm. And one of the things that you mentioned that scientists are looking at are some invasive crab species that are sort of multiplying in these waterways. What are some of the other concerns that scientists have that they're trying to uncover?
Well, it's interesting, and one of my sources in the article says this, that it's really flabbergasting that in Panama, you have so many, you're basically looking at a major artery in the shipping world, and there haven't been any really studies about invasive species, either in Panama or the effects that all these ships coming through the canal have on the rest of the world. If you can recall, invasive species are spread by either via ballast water, which is the water inside ships, or they, you know, latch themselves onto the hull, or they can be in cargo. So, you know, big ships going around the world, they're naturally in a network that spreads these invasive species. So by expanding the canal, you're expanding the shipping, the volume of ships that go through, the number, and also the volume of cargo. So you're not just expanding the canal, you're expanding, in essence, the number of invasive species and frequency that they're spread around the world. And this is just an intermesh network, and people don't really think about it that way. So it's a double-edged sword, because you're not thinking about what's happening in Panama on the local environment and the micro scale, and you're not thinking about what happens on the global scale either. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I mean, if you're from Chicago like me, you'll know about zebra mussels and the havoc mm-hmm. they've wreaked on the water systems in Lake mm-hmm. Michigan. Another thing that I thought was interesting was the water and with salinating fresh water.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting when I talked to one of the head of the environmental impact team, I guess you'd call it, for the canal association, the group that runs the canal expansion. He said there were no problems with salinization in the water. And the day that I was out in the boat with some Smithsonian researchers who were investigating this crab species, they took a measurement of a quote-unquote freshwater lake, and it had a relatively high level of salt in it. So, you know, I'm hearing what this one person in the government is telling me, and I'm literally in the boat reading, you know, a saline measure, and it's curious what's happening. And, of course, as you know, the amount of salt you have in the water is going to affect the kind of biota you have, oxygenation. So, they claim that with every ship that goes through using 52 million gallons of water every time it goes through the lock, that, you know, all the extra saline that they're pulling in from the ocean on either end of the canal is getting diluted. But you have to wonder, because, again, it's not like a little stream we're talking about here. It's a canal that's really only 80 kilometers wide, or excuse me, long from Atlantic Ocean to Pacific Ocean. So chances are pretty good that a lot of salt water is sort of infiltrating at the ends and affecting a lot of the species diversity in the canal itself.
And how does that affect drinking water? I mean, you went down there. You've seen what Panama City is like, and I'd like to hear a little bit more about it. But is fresh drinking water a problem there?
Well, the fresh drinking water comes from upstream of the rivers that feed the canal. So they don't really necessarily get any drinking water straight from the canal that I'm aware of. So I don't think it's a problem. But
it's not draining those sources?
No, it's not draining, not as of yet. I mean, that's another big issue with the expansion is, are we going to have enough water coming from the Chagres River Valley to be able to feed the canal? And it's debatable, you know, the Canal Association will have you believe that there's plenty of water coming from the Chagres, but during a dry season in Panama, you know, the canal can drop a substantial amount. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the new expanded canal does on the freshwater supply of people living in Panama City. And they do treat their water, so I mean, you know, I'm not sure whether they could use saline water or how much extra that would cost, but they do treat it to start with, so we'll see.
Well, I'd like to hear a little bit more about where you went and what you saw. You mentioned some animals that you saw running across the road. How do you pronounce it? Coati?
I think it's coati, yeah. They're crazy little animals. They're like half monkey and half dog, sort of, and they run with these tails sticking way up in the back, and they're really fun. They kind of like bob up and down the grass, and they're really fun to watch. I saw crocodiles in some of the lakes. I've tried to ignore them because they're kind of scary, like 8-footers. What else did I see? Well, and this is not an animal, but when I was in the north coast of the canal in Colón, I was in the mangrove forest, and that was just really remarkable. If you ever get a chance to go to mangrove forest, it's really amazing. The trees, the one species has roots that kind of buttress itself up, and it looks like little fingers picking across the water, and it's really, you know, dense and steamy and hot on the coast, and that was really remarkable. And it is also remarkable because if you drive less than, you know, 2 miles, you're in the middle of the free zone in Colón, which is one of the most rapidly developing areas in the whole country. And they're just clearing the mangrove forest to put in 3-foot cement platforms for all the cargo that's coming in off the ships into the canal. Some people don't realize this, but something that's really popular is the ships come to the mouth of the canal and then unload their ship cargo onto a train, ship it down to the other end of the canal, and then load it back onto a ship. So at the both ends of the canal, you have these huge shipping docks where all the cargo is being moved back and forth. And anyway, near Cologne, it's rapidly expanding at the cost of the forest there. And it's also a sad example of how the government isn't taking care of its people. All the expansion and money that's being traded there, it's probably the most, you know, squalid conditions I've ever seen people living in, and it's really heartbreaking. So people aren't directly benefiting from all the economic boom that the area is undergoing.
That was the scientist Andrea Garleski speaking with me about the ecological and economic impacts of expanding the Panama Canal. To read her feature and view pictures of the canal's excavation sites, visit thescientist.com. That's all for the Scientist Podcast this week. Thanks for tuning in.
This edition of The Week was brought to you by Invitrogen. Gibco Cell Culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.